It's just like being on the bottling line talking, but without the music and the manual labor.
Cool. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful. My body's ready for a mountain climb. All of a sudden it will all become lovely. The flower that opens in the morning light.
What a day, what a day, what a day. I'm always excited when we're in the podcast room at Bissell Brothers headquarters and we're not in Zoom in the virtual world. But today especially, very excited because we are going to talk to Margaret Dever, who I got to spend some time with last week or the week before, a couple weeks ago. But you have had quite a day today, starting with a polar plunge in the Casco Bay, a field trip to Trillium for the release of Middle Age Genius, the Bissell Brothers collab with Trillium.
Yep, little brewery called Trillium.
Little brewery called Trillium. Let's start with that. How was the trip to Trillium today?
It was a lot of fun. It was different than I was expecting. I don't know. It felt a lot more spaced out, I guess, and just like a bigger footprint than here. But yeah, I feel like when I came in here, everything was huge and just on a bigger scale. So this was like even more
and
so.
And then you went and saw Big Brother. And to be clear, you guys went to Canton?
Yeah, we went to Canton. We toured their production facility first, and then we went over to their, I think they're calling it their forever home.
It's the forever home. Yep.
They said that quite a few times.
So they're really going to have to backpedal if they ever move again.
It has been very well branded, the forever home. But the reason I say that we spent some time together the last couple of weeks is because you came up to Milo to help us bottle. And that's because you were in our an internship program that we started here at Bissell Brothers recently. And I'll let Noah kind of take it away, talk about a little bit more about the internship program, because I think on the back of that, there's also some fun news to share.
Yes.
And I like exciting news.
Yes, the flair for the dramatic. So you were the second participant in our equity diversity internship program. That was really, I would really give all credit for the kind of origin of that with Tahana, as you've probably picked up, and kind of coming off the heels of everything, the momentum that Brianne really started. Was sort of really from Hannah. She saw it, just a great idea that everyone latched onto immediately. And yeah, the first one was actually, oddly enough, someone that now works at Trillium.
We got to meet her. Benita, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And Matt was kind of trying to prep me before this, and I'm very bad about talking about stuff I'm really proud of.
He's not much for the bragging. Noah Bissell is not much for bragging.
But it's, and I'm in a cool place with it since it is definitely not my, the thing that I led the charge on. But it has really just been astonishing to see really the combined efforts of a bunch of people make it happen in really a pretty short order of time. So I definitely want to get into your experience with it, for sure. I'll just cut to the chase. I think Matt's big news. We offered you a job, and unless you had serious second thoughts today, I believe you accepted.
We'll see how this goes.
Oh, no. That is a bad way to do it. You get somebody to accept a job. Hey, do you want to sit down for the podcast tomorrow? How's that?
I did ask beforehand, so I mean, I at least have that. But no, just in it's almost unfair in some ways because it sets such a ridiculously high bar for you have just by just the right time. And we were looking to hire someone kind of going into the summer anyway, but just with normally the hope would be we can help get someone a job somewhere.
Totally. But the fact that you need that experience to do so, and really the tangible things to help kind of propel a career, having spent some time really working in a brewery, handling those things that don't always aren't easy to come by in any other way.
Because applications can just blend together so much without it's weird because we put such a low value on experience elsewhere. I mean, I have zero experience brewing professionally anywhere but for myself. But at the same time, it's just, you know, if you have 50 applications, it can be hard to delineate what. But anyway, I was kind of getting to the fact that we could also provide, everything just worked out in such a beautiful way. And I've just been really coasting off that energy this week. I guess to kind of just another sort of small world thing, the Sacred Heart connection, which was something that we completely botched on making even the connection. But ultimately, that's kind of how you found yourself here. So why don't you talk a little bit about what got you into that, what got you interested in that program in the first place and what the experience there was like?
Yeah, I started it in May, like last May, and it'll finish this May about. And I was looking to get into the beer industry and really just to like learn everything I could about beer and about how to make beer and everything. So I was researching programs, and there's a couple. There's one at UVM, but it seemed it was more like business related. And I was sort of more interested in like actually like making beer and figuring that out. So the closest one to me was at Sacred Heart, and it was new. So I like decided I had saved a lot of money because I was working and living at home.
Still struggling.
But I mean, a lot. It was like, you know, for me. So I was like, this is what I want to do. And it was awesome. Like to go from, I'd maybe homebrewed a couple times on a 1 gallon system, but to just have like real brewers teach everything was awesome. And I think they did a really good job of trying to cover all of their bases. So, and that's how I like to learn, sort of like everything, sort of get a well-rounded view of things. So they had a class on sanitation and safety. We did OSHA. We did, like we were calling chemical manufacturing people, and like they were basically like, pretend you're opening a brewery and call these chemical suppliers and try to like price out like what you would need or make a plan. And then we did like actual brewing at Two Roads on a couple pilot systems that they had. And that was really great because we sort of started, everyone in the class was sort of at a low level. And so we sort of all learned together and built recipes and got to play around. And then we did a class that was more sensory based, which was also really cool. It was like we did sensory, but then also like draft service, stuff like that.
So it gets into some of that kind of more front of house side as well.
Yeah. Awesome. And then the class I'm in right now is more management and operations. So it's online, and it's a lot of the people in the class are looking to start a brewery. I don't know how many will actually end up doing it, but it's exciting. So we're sort of making a business proposal.
You're now in the UVM.
Right. The UVM side of it. Course. Which is less, I don't know, I think less useful for me in that like I'm like 24 and it's all about like leveraging your 401k and like stuff. Like I don't have like a huge 401k.
I had a little one and leveraged it to buy a house.
I invested I think $1,000 in this brewery. I think I put my car up and the small things I had is collateral. But and anyway.
But that's been really interesting so far to just think about what goes into everything that being a brewery is.
How big are the classes? How many students are in the program with you?
Probably 25 students.
And were you on the, sorry to interrupt, but were you on the first year or second?
The second.
Second, okay. Second. But still very, very new program.
Yeah. So they're sort of figuring it out too, which is great because we sort of have a lot of say in if there's something, oh, I really want to, you know, learn about, I don't like random yeast like you could. So
cool. How were I guess like how segmented was each sort of the focus, or was this sort of happening simultaneously?
It was on like a semester schedule, so the sanitation and safety class and the first Two Roads brewing class was May to September, and then you know September to December was the second Two Roads brewing class and sensory, and then we had a field trip class where we just went around to different breweries in Connecticut. And then this semester is the management and operations, and everyone in my cohort is doing an internship as well. Most of them are doing it in Connecticut because they're all sort of from around there.
That's I just hearing we talked a lot, quite a bit about it anyway, driving up to Milo last week, and I for me at the time especially they're and granted, I didn't look that hard, I will definitely admit, but it didn't seem like there was a lot of programs at the, as you were kind of hinting at, there was either sort of really condensed, sort of like, fill it all in 6 weeks, or like a 4-year college at that point. I think it was just UC Davis at the time. Right. And it everything you described seems like, wow, that would have been so valuable to me.
Yeah.
I would have, that would have been so valuable on, so for that to have started just on the second year, just, it seems like you made a very, very good decision. No matter what happened afterwards, it seems, I was just really, really, taken aback by how well put together that program seemed to be, especially for being really in its infancy still.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think it was something that I knew I was never going to regret. Like, it was, I'm going to take away a lot of knowledge from this. Mm-hmm. And whether it's I get to be a better home brewer or I get to find, you know, like a really great spot, a job spot. But I didn't really have any expectations going in other than just wanting to learn more. But I thought about, like, in a similar way, like, okay, I could do the UVM one. It's a lot of business. Or then I was like, do I even, like, I could get a master's in food science? But I just sort of wasn't, it didn't all come together in a program the way that this program has all come together.
And that's what I think, to your point and what Noah said, this 1-year thing that, A, it doesn't have the long-term investment, or especially the capital investment that a lot of other studies or schools do have, that literally at a time where that kind of equation seems to be breaking a little bit and people are really kind of looking at it and thinking more about it. But in the little bit of my tiny little lens to it was getting ready to talk to Jamal and looking at Sacred Heart, and even, and it's unrelated to exactly what you're doing, but for Jeff to have the vision of, like, when Jamal reaches out and, like, this is an incredible idea, I know how to leverage our endowment to help you with this, and just all the, like, the synergy that was there and the recognition that we can get this going really quick for you. It looks like it's a team or a group of people, the professors. I know when we posted you, Gordon reached out, like, immediately. He's on Instagram, like, I love seeing one of our students in a while.
Yeah,
like,
Gordon's
in
great.
The wild, you go.
Yeah.
Just like this enthusiasm and this group that really knows how to provide some value to the student in a really tangible way.
I think they're a lot about, like, rich, like, what are you going to get out of this? And they know that everyone's doing that calculation in their head.
Totally.
You know, this isn't like college where your parents are like, you're going to go to college. Like, and a lot of these people have, like, first careers that they're like, I'm going to invest. This is a big investment for someone to make to sort of change their whole life.
Totally. And you had raised a really good point on that ride that I hadn't thought of to that point. But these people aren't teachers by trade, which really makes it all the more, at least my understanding, that had one, like, I think you had said someone that worked in was the head of a department at Sacred Heart was kind
biology.
Of the head.
Jeff Stopper,
But under that, it was people in the working in the beer industry. And I had told you a few years ago, it was nothing like this, but it was the Maine College of Art reached out, and it was, they were sort of trying to do like these 1-day intensive adult ed type of things, but it's just 1 day. And I, long story short, I was just, I tried, but it was I did, thankfully it was only like $100 or something. And it wasn't to me. I got nothing out of
it. You were the Trump school.
But, oh man, I felt very bad. I tried, but it was just, there's no real natural way to, at least that I found. So it gave me a ton of respect for even anyone that's able to communicate these ideas. And to your point, how vast, like, when you say like brewing, that's such a loaded term and big umbrella. And to that point, I'm curious, since it was such sort of almost like a liberal arts of brewing education, what things you found yourself gravitating towards the most?
And just to piggyback on that, where we did gloss over what capacity you got hired in here. So taking that, like what reached out to you in the program and then landing that with what you'll be doing here at Bissell Brothers.
Yeah. I think the parts I was drawn to, I kind of like the math, and sort of the more like, I don't know, science, I guess. I think that was super interesting to me, to just sort of something that I think I couldn't have done by myself. Like I wasn't going to figure that out on my own. You can read books but to have someone really sit down and show you how to do, or how like beer is being made on a, you know, sort of scientific level was really worth it, I think, for me. The things about, you know, like I was saying earlier, like, you know, getting investors, like maybe down the line when I don't know, if I'm an adult and I'm like trying to do that, maybe that will be more useful.
Mm-hmm.
Or like even calling the chemical manufacturers, like I don't foresee myself doing that here.
Paul, you're out.
Yeah.
I'm on chemicals now.
Yeah.
But to piggyback too much or to kind of tangent too much. But I think when you talk about the investment thing, I always think about like I'm a person who wants to start my own business.
Yeah.
It's that like that getting investment from other people and you and carrying that responsibility or even just asking is like nightmare fuel for me.
Fun.
But the moment you said it about the reaching out and calling, that is kind of that can be and is a developed muscle.
Yeah.
And back in the day it would be something that would be kind of scary to me.
Right.
And as I look at my tiny little professional career, like a tiny bit, the lack of fear there to like, somebody has the answer to this.
Yeah.
I don't have the answer right now.
Right.
Let me find out who has the answer, get on the phone and get the answer. And we're doing a little build out in Milo today. We had an electrician there, got a new dishwasher.
Yeah.
And was trying to figure out like actual voltage that this thing was going to run at. He got on the machine, found the number, called the guy, and within 2.5 minutes had the exact answer we were looking for.
Right.
And it doesn't always happen that way.
But it's just another little thing
Most people
get almost scared by the phone call.
And I've lived
in that world forever.
Yeah.
And that's why I say it.
Right.
The 24-year-old me,
I'd
rather be shot first before I'm picking up that phone and calling a stranger to ask a question. So I thought that was really cool that they kind of... You can develop that. And every time you do it, it becomes less scary than the time before.
Right.
I guess is the only thing I'm trying to say.
We ended up kind of all, there was like, there's only a couple chemical suppliers in Connecticut. So he got like 30 phone calls of like, I'm going to open a brewery. And he was like, really?
Yeah. Like, I'm on
you and everyone else.
Brewery scene's really popping here, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I've mentioned it a few times on here before, but the first kind of big call I remember making, in sort of business plan phase was to a hop supplier, trying to kind of, at that time, things have changed a lot, but at that time, hops that are now kind of household names like Citra and Mosaic were still pretty new and Acreage was comparatively small, and you just couldn't spot order them. You had to have contracts, and I knew about that, but didn't really know the limitations to that. So I called, being like, "I'll have a pallet of Citra, please," and basically just got laughed off the phone. So in going back to the value of the program, like if you're just doing that on your own, it's hard to kind of pick yourself up from that and be like, well, I'll call another one then.
Yeah.
In with someone that is kind of nudging you just in the right way, it would have made all of that. Without bullshitting, I really am jealous of the experience. Kind of continue to go back before we go forward, to talk a little bit about, like, I don't know, the beer, I think it's always attracted people for the same reasons. And I think you spoke to that a little bit, where I think of it as almost this Venn diagram of art and science. And you can be on either side. You don't have to be in the middle. There's the rules in the middle dictate all of it. But the you can lean on one side or the other of that. And I've always found almost like, you know, you have a canvas and you can paint whatever you want on it, but the limitations are you have this type of paint and this is the size of the canvas.
Yeah.
And I always find that interesting, what sort of side of that people ebb towards, because there's room, no matter, as long as you're into the thing in the middle, there's value on all sides of it.
Yeah.
But to go back to sort of what the genesis of that, like what... just a long time has passed. It's we were talking a little bit about it before you got here, like just sort of as the beer industry is just a different place, and now it's like been almost exactly 10 years since I was in kind of your shoes of you know, finding beer for the first time. And I'm just sort of wondering what that what led you to the point where you were willing to spend $15,000 to go to school for it.
Big question. I guess I would say, like we were talking, like a liberal arts of beer school. I think that I really like that kind of, like I was saying earlier, like seeing, like I, maybe we talked about this in the car the other day. Like I studied Latin, like all through high school and college, because I loved Latin, because it was like, there was a philosophy, there was a language, there was a history, there was literature, there's science. There's sort of, it's this one thing that, and a lot of things are like that, but This was sort of how it made sense for me. It was like a lens to look at so many different things, and you could, I don't know, I think I like sort of, yeah, jack of all trades, master of none, maybe. Mm-hmm. But,
good industry for
but
that.
But still always,
for real.
Still always better than a master of one.
There you go. So I think that when I first, I think I was telling you too that I never really drank beer until I went to, I studied abroad in Trinity in Dublin.
It's okay. You can say what you were drinking before.
Germany did it. As it often does. Germany did it.
No, Ireland. Dublin.
Oh, God.
Yes.
We can cut that part. Yeah.
That's gone.
Leaving that in.
No, before I was only drinking Smirnoff Ice, only.
Which I've never heard anyone say. And that's really the only reason. Really? Exclusively, which I found honestly respectable.
Like, I wouldn't even, like, you know, you ice someone. And yeah. I wouldn't even do, like, I could do that if someone did that to me. But, like, I would, like, sip, like, Smirnoff Ice. Like,
look for the nuance in the...
but, yeah, then I went to Dublin and I started drinking Guinness and Smittix. And when I came back, I was like, I'm a beer girl now. Like, this is awesome. Like, everyone's going to be so happy because, you know, no one likes to go buy. Like, you got to get someone to go to the liquor store and buy you Smirnoff Ice.
Yeah.
Like, so then it was the beer here was different. I was like, this Guinness is not as good. Or really the Smittix, too, because probably they were, like, sitting on the shelves forever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not St. Patrick's Day. No one's getting that. Yeah. So
Eric Dumas is trying.
Yeah. So I was like, this is different. What's going on? But I had been committed to becoming a beer girl. I couldn't go back to Smirnoff Ice. So
you went and studied abroad and came back changed.
Yeah,
I'm like anybody who ever
I know,
has.
I had to commit to my new identity. But yeah, then really I would say it was like one of my best friend Megan was like a beer drinker, and we started drinking beer together.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, after graduation, we would go to Notch has a run club. The town next in Salem, the town next to me. So we'd go and we'd run every week. And I'm almost at 100 runs, and I'll get my name on a plaque.
Yeah.
Do them.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that was sort of like, I was interested in beer, and I knew that there was something happening there that I didn't understand. So when I started homebrewing, I wanted to figure it out, and I sort of felt like I'd taken it as far as I was going to get on my own. I wasn't Noah brewing, homebrewing substance, you know?
Over and over.
Yeah.
But would recommend it.
dig into that a little bit further. Are you saying that the, almost like the understanding of, or the question of why does this beer taste so much better at the source than it does here?
Yeah.
Was kind of one of the things that, like a problem that you wanted to find an answer to and figure out.
Right. It sort of got me thinking that there's more happening in a beer than it just gets poured into a glass and you drink it. Like, it has a start and it has a story. And yeah, I think that was sort of intriguing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My understanding of that, because I never had that European experience of like, I've had European experiences that, but it's usually been, it was kind of past the point where I knew that German beers, for me, it was mostly German beers. Cause frankly, with Belgian beers, if it's mixed fermentation, it's, you're not really going to lose a lot in travel.
Over time.
They sure as hell are definitely still made there. When you get into, you know, Palm or just other like kind of bigger breweries, it's sort of a different story, but I guess I was kind of past that. But I'm asking to say like what conclusion you came to without, because my understanding is that like Guinness is not, it isn't imported. But I could
you're
be
right.
wrong on
they
that.
They make it in Maryland now, I think. The Guinness here.
Mm-hmm. So it had that sort of bay seasoning sort of note in it.
Yeah. I guess my, I don't know. I think the Smittix was probably just wicked oxidized.
Uh-huh.
Like your homebrew.
Like my homebrew. Yeah.
Like all homebrew.
I also couldn't get my homebrew to not taste like a homebrew. And then I was like, okay, I've hit the hit a ceiling. I need some help. But yeah, I think I sort of determined, I don't know what it was with the Guinness or if it was like, I just missed, I don't know, getting it, you know, right on draft in a.
Or I guess maybe I'd reword that to say, what was it about Notch that sort of was like, oh it can be this good here, just not from Guinness.
Oh, totally, yeah. At Notch, it was first of all just being in that space is so cool.
Yeah, 1,000%.
And I would, you know, I'd go with my friend Megan, her family, my family. Two of my aunts would come all the time, and so it would be like we'd have a whole table, and
wasn't happening at the Smirnoff Ice tasting room.
No, and we'd go on a run, and it was sort of more of like the community 100%. Sense,
awesome.
That really started to stick out. That the beer was, I mean, the beer is awesome,
sure,
but I think it was the whole experience that was like, I'm going to come back here every week. Like, this is going to be a part of my routine now.
Absolutely.
And it's also, yeah, I mean, you can drink those Notch beers all day.
Yeah. And I mean, I can't imagine if I was where kind of you were in sort of the exploration phase.
Yeah.
And I mean, that place blew my mind when I had owned a brewery for like 5 years. It was the first time we ended up down there, and it was still like I'd never seen side pole faucets in America and like all this stuff. So I can really only imagine. And I guess then to sort of bring it back to more the present, I think you're probably the youngest person we've talked to on here, actually, at least
to
pertain to beer anyway, which I find really interesting in going back to sort of how things, sort of the barometer of maybe how things have changed or how they haven't. I am, for the question, I'm just really curious about like how the industry, granted relatively short window, especially like being in it, but how it compared to your expectations. Because I know there was a shitload of things that were a lot different than I had created in my mind.
I mean, when I was growing up, in my head, craft beer was always, my dad always had a Harpoon IPA.
Yeah.
That was his every, you know. And so I always thought all beer just tasted like that. And like it even has like a smell, like if he was drinking it, you could sort of smell it in the And so that was like my childhood beer expectation, Harpoon IPA.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I think the more, I mean, it's been only a couple of years, but I think, I mean, and now like beer is kind of getting blown even out to the extremes in every sense. There's just such a wide variety of different beers, and it's so accessible in a way that I don't know if it was. Yeah.
And there certainly wasn't. To that point of being just pushed in the extremes in every way, like for me, it was like really very bitter double IPAs were like what extreme was kind of in, you know, 2012 or 2011. But I really can't imagine coming into discovering beer where like variations of fruited kettle sours make up such a humongous swath of what's out there. And the definition of accessible, but I guess it's such an old manny get off my lawn thing.
And it's what people probably, the same person said about substance.
Yeah.
Those kinds of beers.
Exactly.
At the time.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I would also argue that a lactose vanilla kettle, undeniably tasty. Like,
yeah.
And I have no moral qualms with them at all. But I wonder how it affects sort of people's expectations of like, oh, this is beer. Because frankly, that in my head, that's much more akin to Smirnoff than it. And that's the whole point of why they're accessible.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just curious of how that may or may not have sort of tainted your understanding.
I still think I still think that there is an idea of like what the beer industry is, and like even going into it, like if like I'm at a bar with my friends, like, and you're going to get a beer, like you're going to be that person who got a beer instead of a cocktail. Like, I don't, like, especially my girlfriends, like, so I feel like,
are you talking about like identity kind of stuff again, you mean, or?
I don't know. I still think like if I was going to go out with my friends and we'd get a beer, like it has a different, I guess I don't know what I'm saying.
Like sort of
your
sets
friends
the tone.
Would order cocktails more so. And
well, sometimes I guess it depends on where we are. I don't know. I don't want to paint abroad.
No, yeah. not at all. I do think, and I'm not sure if this is what you're saying, but I definitely feel like the vibe of the, it sort of sets the tone what people are drinking, not because they're going to necessarily like get more drunk or anything, but like cocktails all around is a different vibe than beers all around.
Totally.
It just kind of is.
Yeah.
Or even if you want to go get a cocktail or you want to go get a beer, you're doing the same thing. You're hanging out with someone.
Yeah.
But I think there's some nuance there that is almost implied of like,
I don't know.
I just like
the degree of the vibe.
The community sense, I think, is undeniable. And it's very, that's really cool to picture like that environment of like, wow, this liquid brings like my families together.
Right.
To sort of enjoy this together.
Right. Yeah. I think like, even though like a lot of these new beers might taste like a Smirnoff Ice, it's still a beer. And I still think there is that sort of wall that people run up against where it's like, okay, I could have this Smirnoff Ice tasting beer, or
I get what you're saying.
Yeah, me too.
And
that's
frankly the thing that I've always said with, and I've always been really kind of vocal about it, of what, like a lot of my beer development came under Noah. You know what I mean? So I've kind of think I've
so basically I'm a teacher in my own right.
But had this bit of purism in the ordering to me. But the one thing that I could very much feel was very like authentic and innate for me is with a lot of these beers, I would be like, cool, I could order that. But if I'm ordering that, I'm only ordering that thing to stay in the realm of beer.
Right.
Because frankly, instead of having this, I've got no problem getting a frozen frosé on a machine.
Right.
And I would rather drink that thing because it doesn't have the constraints in it.
Right.
This thing just goes all the way.
I'll
drink a frozen margarita.
Right.
I'll drink a margarita. You know what I mean?
Right.
Instead of something that's stays within the confines of beer but has some of those.
It's like, are you going to be the person that orders a beer, or are you going to be the person that orders something else?
Yeah.
And like, if you're trying to hit new people, I don't know if going to those extremes, I still think you run into a wall.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That's really interesting and definitely makes a lot of sense. Go for it.
I wanted to piggyback on what he said kind of just really explicitly. You had said that you made a conscious decision to get into beer.
Yeah.
I think you literally worded it that way.
Yeah.
And I'd be very curious to kind of what Noah had said of maybe even like a specific example or where something that has been very surprising or very much different than what you would have imagined the beer industry to be you get into it. Sometimes I go way too vague with a question and think that's a problem. And then
her perspective's unique because you had like a very tangible taste of what the industry was for the last year. I guess is how I would, I mean, really just it sounds like that class was almost as close as you could get to the industry without literally working in it.
Yeah, yeah. No, so. You're probably right. I guess I would say, well, one, I feel like everyone who's in the beer industry drinks like lagers. I didn't expect that. That's different than I expected. So, yeah, but I think that also speaks to, like...
Nothing truer.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. I think that speaks to, like, maybe a bigger idea that's, like...
Talk about identity crises.
Yeah, yeah. But that it seems like you would expect everyone to be, like, oh, yeah, like, I don't know, like, drinking...
Like JC or something? Barley wines only.
Yeah, yeah. To be really, like, into... I don't know, the sort of the extremes that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But the extremes, they're not necessarily for the people who are making them. It's, you know, to hit your target audience. So I think, yeah, sort of that gap as someone who considered themselves a craft beer consumer, then now can go to the other side. Like there is sort of a gap in, what people like, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And I've thought about that a lot lately because I think they're really lately, meaning like the last handful of years, because there is that. I feel like lager consumption within the industry has almost got to almost a point of parody where it's just like this necessary. You're not even in the industry if you don't just drink lagers. And when anything is set up on that pretense of like, you need to do this because you do this is bullshit. And but I also think it speaks to a bigger thing where like most things just have a natural tendency to revert to the more mean. Nuance and revert to the mean of some sort, but certainly start loud and then revert back to
right.
Like sort of if you look at like a lot of musical artists' career, like they become more refined, I guess, generally if you're around for a long time.
There is an element, I can feel myself doing it. I'll be 100% honest. Like it has become cool to be the brewery person or the brewer that bucks the thing that's really popular that everybody likes and to drink the lager. And then to Noah's point, as that becomes cool to do and the feedback loop kicks in there, it happens so much that it becomes kind of a parody in itself. But I do, the part that is real, to your point, is I think that with time and understanding, it's like mastery is not about adding things. Mastery is about taking them away. You know what I mean? And it's like the Stephen King thing, like good writing is writing well without a lot of words. Anybody can write well with a ton of words. It's when you can say the thing very plainly and simply.
Yeah. I'm a terrible writer.
I'm saying a mastery of ingredient, you know, without being able to pull all these other levers and have an incredible understanding of ingredient, time, temperature, and some of these very basic things, I think is the more honest, authentic part of how lagers became the brewer's beer in this.
And I think it definitely reflects on a fatigue naturally of extremes get too extreme. If that's the only thing you're.
Yeah.
But also like, I don't know. It's sorry we're going down this tangent. But
you teed it up.
Yeah, no, I did.
I'm glad I said it.
I have another idea, another difference. Was something I didn't really expect. I think coming here, I noticed it more. And it was sort of hinted at during the class was more that like, when like something happens, like you guys are so have to be so self-sufficient. Like if the canning line breaks, like you can call Wild Goose and like they just were here, but like first like Jeff like really went through every single thing, like, or if something happens, like, you know, you sort of have to be able to figure it out in sort of a more mechanical way than I guess I was expecting or had really had any experience with.
Yeah, that's so in your kind of mind, would it be like something like what would happen like in my house, let's say, okay, yeah, the, you know, hot water goes off,
you call the,
I'm gonna maybe do a half-assed effort to figure it out, but then you're on the horn with a plumber. That makes sense.
In a business, there's tons of people relying on you, there's tons of things that need to happen, and you're putting on that plumber hat a little bit quicker and a little bit longer to try to get to the bottom of that thing because there's so much more that relies on it getting back up and running.
Yeah, and my plumber hat is but pretty sad hat. I want to make that clear. But yeah, that's very interesting. Sort of, I guess, and this is getting into more nuanced territory, but I don't know. There's and it's well deserved of stereotype of like a tattooed bearded man that is a brewer.
Yeah.
How true or not true have you sort of seen whatever sort of archetype you had of your head of like a member of the brewing industry is this? Yeah. How is that sort of compared to reality?
Well, a lot of people here have tattoos.
Yeah, I don't. I'm just gonna say, but
and a lot of people have mustaches recently.
Beards are going, mustaches are coming.
Yeah, a lot of mustaches. Yeah. So that's a little different, but I think just being here, that hasn't jumped out at me. I think what's more jumped out at me is just how, like, I don't know, excited everyone. I mean, I don't know. At least it felt like to me, excited everyone was to, like, teach things and explain things. Like, mm-hmm. that was sort of more what I noticed more. Obviously, like, Hannah's in the production side and she's awesome and she's been a great sort of like role model, I guess is the word, and teacher. But yeah, in terms of like my class, there's three other awesome ladies who are in that class and maybe 20 or so guys, and some of them have beards, I will say. But
I think it's really a reflection of laziness more often than not.
Once you get there and it's like accepted by everybody, I can do this for a long time.
No, I think it's more that when I actually started to like come here, it was like, okay, yes, even though like, yeah, this could be like a bearded guy, it's like, well, this is actually a person too.
Yes.
Like, it's not just like a picture in my head of a brewer. It's like, okay, this is a person who, you know, I can like build a relationship with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really nice to hear. And about the teach, I'm really glad you had mentioned that because I had maybe 2 or 3 days that were pretty much like more direct me and you, of you shadowed in the cellar one day and then the 2 days in Milo. But beyond that, I've mostly just kind of been watching from afar, and I cannot remember being as proud of our staff, seeing like it's a very genuine excitement and the amount of patience and the literal like lightness that everyone has had at the opportunity to discuss something. It has made me immensely proud, and it's not a surprise, but it's been to see it in that framework has been. And granted, that's not to take anything at all away from you, because it really, to make that dynamic work, you have to have an interested participant on the other end.
Totally.
And that's very true. But I've been floored with pride at just seeing how genuine that excitement has been.
Yeah.
And also on top of that, then seeing you in we did the cellar, then Milo was the next 2 days. And I told you, I was really, really surprised by, I'm not saying like, yeah, go ahead and brew, but of course not. But I was really surprised by like continually at how capable you already are. And I think that certainly speaks to the program, but mm-hmm. also on some level capable with, you learn, then you fine tune to wherever you are working, because everything's going to be alike and very different at the same time between each brewery. I don't know. I'm rambling, but I am proud very
of
proud.
Team.
I'm
you
very
should
proud.
Be.
Very
no,
proud
because
of his team.
Like literally everything that I've done is because someone has showed me how to do it or told me that that's why you do this. Mm-hmm. I feel like there are internships where you can like, you know, have questions and feel like you have to hold them back, or sometimes feel like you're in the way and you don't know what to, you know. But that hasn't been my experience at all here. And like every question I have, I'm like, okay, well, what about, you know? And like, I feel like people are like, oh, well, like that's, you know, why you thought about this, and just have an answer, which is really cool. Everyone has just been so, so patient and really excited, which makes me excited too.
And I think a big part of it is because we were all there. Literally, besides I guess Eric, Paul, and JC are the only, and Hannah, of course, now, have worked at other breweries, but it's, no one has had been like a long career grizzled veteran that, you know, came in with, cause I don't think that would really work for us in terms of like having really firmly ideas, you know, solidified with time.
But I
know you'll probably mostly have good things to say, but I'm very curious about kind of getting into that experience of the, because again, you're the second person that's done it. And just to kind of maybe walk through what those 4 weeks were on as much as detail as you want to go, but for going forward, what things were good, what things could maybe be shifted a little. Just to try to get into your actual experience with that.
I think the first like 2 days was like a lot of information in a really good way. Like you just sort of, and I think that's maybe the best way to start is to just start seeing everything, start putting your hands on. Like, I mean, obviously you don't like have to go open and
not
mouth.
A lot of budding presses.
Yeah, but like actually like a lot of the things that I think were the most helpful were like when someone would physically show me how to do something, like even like putting on a clamp, like Matt showed me how to flip it up and like for like days would be like, you know, every tri clamp and I'd flip it up, you know? And so I think, or like moving a keg, Hannah showed me how to get it on its side and like roll it and then sort of like shot. I don't even know that motion, but like,
it's the move
to swivel it on to a pallet. Because I think my experience in the school was so much more theoretical. Like, I was sort of, the way at least it worked for me was like that getting that practical side and getting sort of like muscle memory of things was really helpful. And it maybe if you were coming in blind, like it would be helpful to have a week at the beginning where you just go through and you're like, well, this is beer and this is what happens. But I think, I was sort of excited and ready to hit the ground. But even, the first week, the first 2 days, I would say, I was mostly with Jeff and Hannah and Matt on the canning line. And what sort of impressed me was that I didn't even know that they were all sort of working in this huge, like, I guess, ecosystem maybe there were things that they were doing that I didn't even notice and helping each other out in ways that were unspoken. And the machines, especially the canning line, like figuring out that Jeff wasn't even looking at it, but he could hear when something happened, which, at, you know, kind of when you're new to it, can go right over your head. But then like the third day I was like, oh, something's happening here. Like Jeff just looked over there and Hannah knew that a can had fallen down and she picked it up. So I think that was just, that first week was really cool to sort of pick up that there was a whole world going on. And that even like if like Matt Nelson was walking by and a slip sheet had come off the depalletizer and was on the ground, like he would pick it up and put it where it belonged. Like everyone was sort of helping out, which was impressive. And I was like, okay, like I need to figure out how I can get in there. Like, I can't just stand here. But yeah, at the beginning, I didn't even really, like, I couldn't help because I didn't know what was happening.
I would be a terrible intern for that reason because I'd just be anxious about that. And
So once I realized that things were going on, I was like, okay, got to figure this out. So that second week, again, I was sort of with the packaging team and, just sort of really got like reps in on like watching the canning line and like making sure, you know, hear and starting to hear it to myself, which was cool. And I think that was really good, especially because so many entry level positions you would start in packaging. So I think that was a really helpful tool. And I also think I watched a couple CIPs and stuff, but I think the most helpful thing there was getting it a couple different times from a couple different people. Because like Jeff might pour the chemicals into the pump when you're doing cleaning, but like Hannah and Matt pour it into one of the hoses. So then I sort of had to think about, okay, why is that different? And what are the sort of concepts of the CIP that are happening here that can allow Jeff to do it this one way and Hannah and Matt to do it another way? And especially because at that point, I wasn't sure if I was, I didn't know I was going to stay. So the sort of steps of what you guys do were almost less important to, like, how am I going to be able to take
than
this?
The true theory right, of what's
the theory
happening.
Of it. Yeah. Like, so
totally.
I think, yeah, just seeing like the different ways to do things and why they were all right and sort of processing that was really helpful. And then my third week, I spent a day with Seth brewing, and that was so fun and just really got to sort of pick his brain.
Good brain to pick.
Yeah.
And then we spent a day in the cellar. And then we went to Milo, and I'm so glad I got to go to Milo. I think that you should, if and when you do the internship again, like, just to see a sort of way different world. Literally, like, if this was its own ecosystem here in Portland, like, you guys in Milo, Maddie, have your own, definitely have your own ecosystem too.
That ecosystem was an underwater ecosystem today, I'll tell you that much, but it is a different one for sure.
Yeah. So I would, highly recommend that. Then this last week, I'm sort of back with the packaging people. Mm-hmm. And actually, we had a wild goose technician in for 2 days. And that was also really cool to get to see someone who knows the canning line so well. And like how we were talking about earlier, getting to see different things from different people.
Yeah.
This was sort of getting to see the canning line in a whole different way.
Yeah.
And all the parts. And so.
So we always have to have a contractor come in on the fourth week.
On the fourth week. Because if it was the first week, totally. I wouldn't have been ready for it.
No, of course not. Yeah. No.
The fourth week contractor.
We need the gas to go down this week. Let's make that happen so we can have a teachable moment.
Yeah. But I think everything. Yeah. I think one of the things I've been trying to do in as a new, you know, Portland person, in my new identity, not as a beer girl, but as I want to be, like, one of my goals was to just sort of take in everything I could and say yes to everything. So it was like maybe the first afternoon, Paul was like, I'm going to put in a regulator. Do you want to help? And I was like, yes. Like, so just sort of having that attitude. Or when they were like, oh, we're going swimming in the ocean.
do you want to do that?
Do you want to be one of us or not?
Well, actually, it's part of my lineage, so I can do this.
Yeah, so just like having, sort of being purposeful about that and really wanting to not miss an opportunity.
Well, that is about as valuable of advice. You didn't even mean it as advice, but that, I think, in that context especially, like, saying yes to experience is almost never going to come back to bite. Well,
no, but I think even more specifically, and not that I'm the optimist, but like as time goes on and life goes on, that new excitement of you're never going to get that back again, right?
Yeah.
So to go into that I'm going to say yes to every experience here to get the most out of it at the time when that's very easy to do.
Right.
You know what I mean? You would be doing yourself a huge disservice if you didn't take that energy and that opportunity to do that. I think that's very good advice for somebody starting out.
Yeah.
Because year six, year seven, that canning line going down, maybe you've been through it a couple times. It happens at a moment when you know it can't happen. Just the reality of, just like anything else, it becomes a little more complacent, all of those things. And that's not to take away from the amazing moments that you have and still have in this company when Noah sees his team being so willing to give time and share to make your experience incredible. You're still going to have the great moments. But year seven, you know what? The excitement is gone and you've got to be looking for different fuel that fuels you.
Right.
So I think doing that at the beginning is amazing.
Yeah. I was coming in here and like, I wanted to be able to get a lot out of it because I felt like this was my opportunity to really try it.
You got one.
Can I ask you a very did you going into this, did you have eyes on if I do so good, I could work at Bissell Brothers sort of thing? Or was that not a thought that you had?
It was a thought I had when I was first looking at the internship. I'd mm-hmm. be like, oh, my God, if I did this, then maybe I could work at Bissell Brothers. It was mm-hmm. like a dream in my head. And then when I sort of talked to Paul and Hannah initially, like when I was interviewing, it was like, well, we're, you know, it almost was like we're not going to like it was off the table in a way that I was like, OK, so it's off the table. So I'm going to really try to like learn everything I can and then be able to take that somewhere else.
Totally.
But I will say I was like going around to all my like my friends would be like, how's it going? And I'd be like, oh, my God, it's the best ever. Like,
I think I'm doing pretty good.
I would literally like I think the night before you gave me the job offer, I told my friend Josie, I was like, best case scenario, like, I know it's not going to happen, but best case scenario, they like say, like, we want you to stay.
That's amazing.
I couldn't not, honestly. Timing was not perfect, but it was. And I'll be perfectly honest, you know, every time you'd have another interview, a little spike of jealousy would come up in me. I was like, fuck, really sucked to lose her already. I would ask one more thing on that point, because that's very interesting. Because going forward, we just don't hire, we're not constantly growing and bring on. So frankly, at least for the next probably foreseeable few, that it kind of will be off the table.
Yeah.
Is there anything that comes to mind, because you were operating really under that perspective mostly, that would have been, even if it's subtle changes, to more geared towards like, we're shaping you to use this elsewhere? Or is that kind of too vague of a question?
No, I know what you mean. I think like having a focus on, like we were talking about earlier, like, the concepts. And I know earlier I was saying that the school was so much concept and it was nice to have like practical. But even like reading in a book is different than getting the concepts sort of in practice.
Theoretical is very different than asking yourself, why does this part of the process matter to another part?
Right.
I think that's super smart.
Right. So I think all of that sort of, and I don't know if that was, you know, on purpose or just because I got to see it from so many different people that it sort of became a conversation where like Jeff would do it this one way and I'd say, well, why are you doing it that way? You know, Hannah does it this way. And there's, you know, and they could answer that, which was helpful to me and sort of putting that together. But yeah, I think sort of having a focus on that and not, I mean, to a certain extent, like the steps matter. But I think the more you can do, like, why the steps matter.
100%.
Yeah.
Could I flip that to just a really cool moment? I hear you saying some incredible, insightful things about why you think you were able to be successful in this internship and get offered a job. Saying yes to absolutely everything and really being kind of so focused on learning, whether that's because you're hoping you're working here, you can take that somewhere else. So you're kind of widening the scope to not just, okay, they told me I do this way. Why why do I do this? How does it relate to every other part in the process? All of those things. From your perspective, Noah, what was it about Margaret that she was doing that made you guys offer her a job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's a lot of what, without really putting the same labels or whatever on it, I think it was a picking up on a lot of the things that you've been describing in terms of willingness. Willingness was the biggest thing. There was a very overt like interest, but wasn't that almost, it's hard to explain, but sometimes where interest can be so intense that it's like, this is unsustainable. Yeah. Like this person might love this now, but you probably will not in a year.
Yeah.
There was a more consistent level of enthusiasm, which is really important to get into any career. Like there's shitty parts. There's no way around that. And with time, as Matt said, like you have to get continually almost reinvent what interests you about it to stay interested. So there's that. There was certainly it's a lot of really intangible things. And sure. It was a huge amount of just your personality. And I hate to say, it's just very hard for me to delineate what came from where, you know, but I also kind of think that not, this is bad to say, but I a part of me thinks that even without the brewing program, I would have had a lot of the same feelings about you. Mm-hmm. But with that said, I think because of the program, like, A, you'll be able to hit the ground running now much quicker than you would otherwise.
Totally. And
also just like the questions, what I kept saying to everyone else behind your back was that she keeps asking the right questions. And that's so critical when, and yeah, like you're, it's hard to say that because, like, how are you supposed to know what the right questions are to ask? But what it shows is that you're observing what is happening.
Yeah.
You are not passively there waiting to be told what's happening or exactly. You're trying to make sense of it on your own constantly. Yeah. And I think that's what I saw in that. With that mindset, you'll be able to do whatever you want in this industry for real. Yeah.
Incredible.
So yeah, not the greatest answer, but I guess the moral of the story is you're a great person, and I think we all felt that, and it seemed like you would just be a fantastic fit.
I think you did give a great couple tangible, like very tangible things, but while saying that it's all the intangibles, but to your point on the intangibles, there was a when somebody comes up. Somebody knew somebody who's not part of the equation, right? There is a level of fakeness is a harsh word, but it's a real word, right? It's like if you go on the first date you ever go on with somebody and the 10,000th date you go on with them, they're going to be two different representations of the person, right? So if we're up in Milo and a new intern is coming up that we've never met, we're not going to like change out of our costumes and be entirely different people, but you're going to get like a kind of a polished version of who that person is. Right. And to Noah's point, and we talked about it before, but by like 3 hours in or 4 hours in to that day, that polish wears off and there was a comfort. And I think that's where the intangible things are, is like
how quickly
you can get to your comfortable self with another person. And that's the kind of the dynamic thing that can only be intangible, and you can't try to prepare for that, do that. And that was the part that was really cool to me leaving, was like, it didn't feel like an intern just came to my life. I felt like somebody rolled up from Portland to come rock a day with us.
Yeah, you know truly. What I mean?
Wow, truly. Thank you.
It was very, very cool. Truly.
And I was saying that to everyone, but also being like trying to restrain myself from being like, we got to hire her. Yeah. But because I, you know, really my biggest fear was that then it sets a precedent for this.
Yeah.
Which is fair.
It is, but it's also like that you can't.
And that's why Paul and Hannah said under no circumstances, no matter what, will we be hiring your ass. Yeah. All right.
So we'll see what happens in the future. But I, you know, it was a concern of mine, but at the end of the day, it was just too, everything about the experience was too good to ignore. So I could keep blowing roses about all that, but I'm just I speak for everyone just saying we're extremely happy that it has worked out the way we are, and we're gonna be seeing a lot more of you now.
So am I.
On. Well, I'm not sure how excited you'll be about this next part. You've had an extremely long day, so we're gonna get you out of here a little quicker than normal.
That prolonged dopamine from the polar plunge wore off probably like 8 hours ago.
Yeah. So I'll give you the option of, so it's going to be, this is called the three basic. Matt can run you through the, if you're not.
Well, if it was me and I was doing an internship, I'd have been listening to some Grain and In episodes.
You know,
to the end now?
No, I did. End. I was. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay.
Do you know what the three
fuck
bay
yeah.
is?
Yeah.
Okay.
You really know what the three bay is?
She's not a liar.
Anybody listening, that's looking for jobs and brewing, applying to some jobs and brewing, some stuff like that. All jokes aside, a few points of really tangible advice here for how to succeed.
1,000%. And for by all means, it seems like if you're serious about getting into beer but not really sure where to start, I would absolutely look into the Sacred Heart.
Definitely. I would say the same thing.
Because I'm truly not saying it. If that was around when we were, I think there's a very good chance that I would have found myself there.
Absolutely.
So one of the big things I learned about you, just Taylor's big Taylor Swift fan, which is great because variety is the spice. There's no current big Taylor Swift fans in production. We need that. We got a little too much metal, definitely a little too much fish. We needed that
so
balance.
Much fish, even up here.
So I'll give you the choice of whether you want to go with three breweries you visited, or you know, been to, like, or just that you know of, or if you want to do three of our beers, with three Taylor Swift albums. So either
albums.
Or
albums
or
albums.
Songs, what really whatever would make this easiest for you. But Taylor okay. Swift productions Taylor Swift. Have to be part of it.
Okay. I'll do Taylor Swift. I'll do song. Can I do songs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Taylor Swift songs and beer. Your
sure.
beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Perfect. Okay. Perfect. Okay. Yes.
Ready to go.
I don't like to always make it about myself, but.
I'm going to say that, okay, Taylor Swift, All Too Well, the 10-minute version, Taylor's version, 10-minute version.
So this is what you were talking about, how she re-released some music that Scooter Braun had seized or some shit.
Yeah.
I will say, we talked about it before, I used to love Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
Now I do not like Taylor Swift. But the kind of reclaiming her own music and re-releasing this stuff, that was an incredible move. And my hat is off to her for that. I love the answer.
Yeah.
Keep going.
It came on, someone put it on in the tap room the other day, or in the back. And
that wasn't you.
It wasn't me.
Wow.
And JC got really mad. And it was like, I was like, oh my God, I wonder if it's the 10-minute
we
version.
We need more frog metal.
And I swear he thought it was me. And I was like, it wasn't me. Like, I would never, like, I'm not touching the music.
Not yet.
I
month
promise.
Six, month eight, I'll be rocking, but I'll give you time.
Yeah. But I'll say, so that's like a big song, right? So I'll go with, what is JC's barrel age? Is that 10%? His filthy.
Oh, Angels with Filthy Souls? Yeah, absolutely.
It keeps on climbing and climbing and climbing.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
It was 12%. 12 something
12,
this
6,
year.
12? Okay. If it was 10, it would have been perfect.
Mm. It's over the 10 mark, so.
Okay, we'll say a big beer with a big song.
Yeah.
And maybe would make him like, I'm going to put
soften
his,
up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Once
you get to the end of the glass, the song's still going, and you're like, I kind of like this, actually.
Yeah,
great answer.
And then let's see. I like. I gotta think of some songs now. This I'm on the spot. I'm like, my mind is blank.
At the brewery, I'll ask people like, because we control the Sonos right there. I'll be like, "What's your favorite song ever?" And every single person, one after the other, goes, like every song I've ever heard in my life just flew right out of my head.
Okay, we'll do like. Our song, Taylor, this is like Taylor Swift, mm-hmm. like, you know.
Back when you were still a fan.
Yeah, I feel like that's
a ways back. That's a ways back.
That's like a, country, like original Taylor. Like,
so she was real young.
Real young, like summer. Like new relationship. I'm looking at the Precept right now. Let's do Precept.
Yeah,
I feel like
it.
That makes sense.
Love
like,
it.
Summer, crisp.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Even more so when it has its own can soon enough.
I saw the label.
Yeah.
I'm
very
the printed
excited
can.
About
yeah.
That.
That's going to be awesome.
Yeah. Great. Another great answer.
Number three.
One more. Okay.
One more to go.
Okay. I feel like we should do Substance with a song. What's like a classic Taylor Swift song?
Bad Blood?
Bad Blood.
I don't know. I don't know. I never claimed to be a fan. I will say that Patty went through a phase one winter where he played the Ryan Adams cover album of whatever that is. It
Reputation?
No, it's 1989 because I was born that year, so I remember it.
That's what I was going to say. If you want some Taylor Swift with Substance, you better be honed in on that
1989. That's a classic.
I'm not trying to answer for you. All I know is I know that album really well because Pat would not stop playing the Bryan Adams version, or Ryan Adams version.
Okay, well then, yeah, I mean.
What's your favorite song?
My favorite Taylor Swift?
Yeah.
I like Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bop.
That's a good
one. That's a bop.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's what you keep going back to.
And now, you work at Bissell Brothers, and that substance can be yours all the time.
Technically is yours.
It can be mine all the time.
Yes.
Perfect.
Well, Margaret Devers, thank you so much for doing this, especially after a far busier day than I had. Just really could not be happier for the future going forward with you. And I know I speak for everyone else when I say that.
Welcome to the fucking team.
Thank you guys so much. This has been so fun.
Awesome. Awesome. See you Monday.
Yeah. I'm in the mood to be slow and careful.